You're listening to the Thank God for Nostra podcast.
One more topical-based panel. So if they want to come out right now, we have, this is going to be Freedom Tech. So again, I mentioned that I host a panel, I host the podcast. So one of the co-hosts of a podcast called Thank God for Nostr. Again, Nostr is this decentralized internet protocol that works very differently than the existing one. It's just one example of just basically using technology to decentralize and basically decentralize the internet, decentralize different power structures for the good of people everywhere. So we're going to bring out, there we go. We're going to bring out, this panel is going to be hosted by Paul Miller, who you know. It's also going to have Huddlebot, or John Staub. You don't know him as Huddlebot, but John Staub is going to be here as well. Then we have Corey Pike, Zach Mahoney, and Skyler. So I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we'll go from there. Everybody give them a round of applause.
Hello. Thank you. Yeah, I'm Paul. I'm a developer. I work on Mutiny. And yeah, so let's just go down the line. What? Who are you and what are you working on?
Yeah. Me? Okay, good. I'm John, also known as Huddlebot. I work on the Coracle.social Nostr client. Yeah, that's and host of the TGFN Thank God for Nostr podcast.
Check. My name is Zach Mahoney. I'm the founder of a streaming platform built on Bitcoin called IndieHub.studio.
I'm Corey. I also work on IndieHub, and I'm a film producer in Hollywood as well.
And I'm Skyler, and I recently started a design agency focused on Bitcoin companies called Finite Supply.
So we're on a Freedom Tech panel, so I thought it'd be helpful if we would define that. Like, what is Freedom Tech? And why is Freedom Tech important? Is freedom important?
No, that's fine.
You know, is everybody in favor of freedom?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so like, I guess I would break it down into two different kinds of freedom, right? You got freedom from and freedom to. And both of those things can be supported by the same set of techniques. But they require different visions. So we see a lot of threats to our freedom coming down from governments and culture and big business and all that kind of thing. And I think people are more focused on the freedom from interference because we are a pretty free people currently already, and we see that threatened. But in order to maintain our freedom, we need a vision for the future. And so a freedom to do what is equally important. And a lot of people I've talked to can articulate the dangers of communism or whatever a lot more easily than they can articulate what they want the future to look like for their grandkids and great-grandkids. What are we actually hoping to accomplish with our freedom?
Anybody else?
I like what you said. I've been thinking about it that way a long time as well. I like to think of it as the freedom to, and I think the freedom to make mistakes is incredibly important. I think that from a consciousness perspective, the ability to arrive at a conclusion on your own is incredibly valuable. And when somebody is forcing a conclusion down your throat, it doesn't really land. It's not really effective. I think, you know, kind of from a spiritual perspective, I think that it's really, really important to be able to go through your whole process and go from A to Z to truly learn something. And integrate that learning into your being. So, you know, I think from an artistic perspective, from a film perspective, it's really important to have the freedom to iterate over and over and over again. The faster we can do that, the faster that we can sort of evolve from a consciousness perspective.
Yeah, I agree. That's an excellent philosophical perspective. I think the practical perspective from the film world is the developments in technology over the past 20 years have democratized film in many ways and mostly have reoriented around the exact same oligarchy that was controlling it 30 years ago in more oppressive ways and in a less complete film feedback loop between the creator and the consumer, which has led to a lot of cognitive dissonance in terms of what Hollywood has been creating over the past 7 to 10 years specifically. That's the opportunity that we see.
So I'm going to take this in a different direction, but I think freedom defined by an atheist is hell. So freedom needs to be defined by a Christian who's guided by the Spirit of God, because that's where like true liberty is. This is what Christians believe. So, you know, for example, like on this question of like freedom, I personally think that porn should be banned. Like it should be extremely difficult to get porn. The mechanism of how you do that is like where technology can be interesting, but like I'm not necessarily saying the government should ban porn, but I personally don't think citizens in a society, a good society, should have freely accessible pornography. That to me is not like an area where they should be able to experiment and make mistakes and stuff like that. It's like, so to me, I'm like, who governs that is like another question, but freedom is like in that space is like, it must be guided by truth, beauty, and goodness in order to maintain or even survive. You know, like if you don't have these things guiding freedom, it dies and it ends up in slavery ultimately or death. So I think we need to be measured in what freedom means and not just not define it, because it has to be defined within guardrails or else everyone ends up suffering. So it's not like the most libertarian answer, but I think it's the right answer in that like freedom does not survive if it is not aligned to God's natural order. So
yeah, and government technology are not the only things that bind us and limit our freedom. There are a lot of things that we as Americans have lost a lot of touch with, you know, specifically, you know, cultural history and tradition. I barely know anything about my great grandmother. That's pretty unusual in the course of human history. And if we can get back to the land, get back to respecting our parents, all of these things are constraints that are, you know, we can self-impose to start with, but become impositions on us and on our freedom and ultimately shape our liberty and our mission and vision too.
Yeah, just to add on that, you guys are saying this, it makes me think about rehearsals and structure and scenes as an actor. When I was in my early 20s doing a lot of studying, I really, really rejected the idea of structure and I thought it was very limiting. And I'll never forget, as I got older and I progressed, I realized that freedom was structure, that coming into a scene with a certain amount of structure is what was the gateway to the infinite. So I think that, yeah, I think it's a great point of, you know, freedom comes from structure and, you know, there's an inverse relationship there, I think.
Yeah, touching on something you were saying, how much do you guys think we are shaped by our tools? Like I did bad things on the internet because of Twitter's algorithm versus like I wanted to do bad things. And so I found a convenient excuse to Twitter's algorithm. Do you guys have a take on that?
Yeah, that's a super good question. I was just re-listening to a podcast with Stephen Carradini that I recorded a few months ago, kind of talking about this. And, you know, the short answer is I think obviously we have agency and we need to exercise that, but there are lots of things that we are not yet aware of. And so, you know, if you unreflectively use a piece of technology, it's going to shape you in ways that you don't anticipate. And so it's not that you're not responsible for that, but the world is way more complex than we're capable of grasping. And so for the things we do understand, we should try to use those in a responsible way with self-control and intelligence. For the things that we don't understand, we should strive for understanding. And, you know, ultimately base ourselves in the things that we do understand are most productive. And so like, you know, reading your Bible in the morning is a technique that you can use to get in touch with the source of all good things in the world. And that can cover a whole lot, you know, love covers a multitude of sins. So we don't have to have everything totally buttoned down. We don't need to be legalists about everything, but we should also be careful.
There's a really good book on this exact topic called The Shallows. Talks about how technology directly affects the structure of our brains and has kind of from the dawn of time. They,
he goes back and he talks about how maps completely changed how human beings perceive the world around them and actually really physically changed the structure of our brains. So I think that technology has a significant impact on how we interact with the world around us and what we do and why we do it. I think there's some element of you got to have a higher authority that's orienting you and giving you purpose and meaning behind the steps and the actions that you do take so that you're making specific choices and you at least have a reason why you're doing it. Sort of back to the mistake thing, back to the freedom thing, like it's more valuable for me to make a mistake on my own terms and really learn the lesson than to succeed on somebody else's terms. So I think there's just an element of consciousness about it that's really, really, really important. I mean, tools are useful, of course, but they can have a really detrimental effect if you're using them without some, you know, element of consciousness.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's a symbiotic relationship between the tools that we have available and how we use those tools. And I think every generation will need to figure out how they're going to use them to human flourishing or to the degradation of humanity. And these are excellent philosophical responses. But again, I look at the film world which we're engaged with. The advent of streaming made delivery of film a lot more accessible. Digital film made comedies much more possible because of much cheaper to make. And we got a whole run of comedies right as soon as digital film came around. And then they fell off for other technological reasons. And we watch these waves rise and fall. And you know, you look at some structures that are doing it excellently. HBO had a great run of about 7 years where they were using technology extremely well to make some of the best content out there. And on the other hand, Bezos had one of the most discouraging quotes about creativity ever. It was paraphrasing, I don't remember it exactly, but he basically said the elements of story are easy. To make a hit is easy. All you need is the right execution, and you just put the right pieces in the right place. And a couple years from that, and I have good friends who have shows at Amazon that say, I'd take half the money to produce this anywhere else. I would just want out of this. And so you see the structures being either incredibly empowering and impactful or crushing the human spirit and creativity for the sake of financial gain. And those are both happening right now.
I have a film question for you guys. Do you think movies were better before the phone, the handheld, the screen in your hand?
So I think there's a lot of factors contributing to it. I think the devotion that you had to give to renting a movie, where you all had to agree to it together, there's an element of buy-in to it that still exists in the theater to some extent. But you making some sort of commitment to your time made you focus on it a little bit more. And as that started to go away, you also had your phone, and the level of focus that you needed for a film started to reduce. And
watching.
But the symbiotic relationship coming back around to the filmmaker, you know, I've had good friend creators have great movie deals and show deals that where they're told this is for people doing their laundry, right? It's unbelievably uninspiring. Like, why are you making that? That's what AI can take away from us. I'm fine with that. You can have all of that. But I think there were a number of factors contributing to a lower aspirational filmmaking that I think we're still shaking off right now.
Yeah, like the medium is important, right? Like the context is important. There's a difference between a blockbuster movie like Independence Day in a movie theater with a neighborhood. It's a communal event. You shoot that differently. You rehearse that differently. You direct that differently. It's written differently than something like you say that, hey, this is going to be produced for somebody folding their laundry. So it's gotten more complex, which makes things more difficult, I think, because there's so many different outlets now.
I'm curious what, you know, you guys are talking about being, you know, making a conscious decision, making a commitment. How did you guys come to the conscious decision to work on the thing you're working? I sometimes people ask me, you know, like the person at the coffee shop asks me, what do you do? And like, oh, I'm in technology. Like, oh, I hate technology, you know? Well, I told them I ladle soup into the mouths of, you know, starving infants, you know, I would be a cool guy. But I'm working on technology, which, you know, people are having a lot of problems with, and they maybe perceive as slightly oppressive. So you guys chose this path. What you know, conviction or guidance from God? What was the impetus to do this rather than that?
Yeah, well, I've always struggled with distance from the real world. My first job out of college was at an economic modeling software company. And I was there sitting and thinking about what I was doing. I was writing code to make a product to help people do research to inform policy that they would hand off to politicians to make laws to incentivize people to do stuff. And I was like, I just want to help people do stuff, or maybe even just do stuff. And so that's always been like a through line in my thinking. And as far as like what got me into Nostr is I saw like a huge problem of censorship in 2020. And I sort of just looked around and I said, hopefully someone fixes this. And a year later, I just said, well, I guess I'm someone, so I'll fix it. And just went ahead and got my hands dirty and said to myself, you know, this is a 10-year project with a 0% chance of success, but someone has to do it. And so I guess the takeaway is that I recognized a real need in the world and decided that I would try to fill it. And whether I'm successful or Nostr is successful is like definitely not a foregone conclusion, but you've got one life and you should not waste it wondering what you're doing.
That's a great question. That's a great question. I think for me, it's actually kind of how I came to God. The answer lies in that journey for me, which happened sort of in the middle of COVID and through COVID, and all of my priorities were totally rearranged and realigned, and things became very clear and specific for me. And for me, the decision, the revelation for me was, am I working? I have to make a conscious choice. Am I working on the side of creation and love, or destruction and fear? And the answer to that was very easy. This is creation and love. And it says, okay, I now have a job to do. I have an objective. What have I spent my life doing? I've spent my life working in this industry. How can I have the most outsized impact in service of creation and love? And this is, stories are important. Storytelling is incredibly important. And I think that it's really important for the evolution of human consciousness and to push us forward with creation and love. And so if I can contribute in helping improve the quality of stories that are being told and improving the lives of human beings through stories, then it was kind of the only direction that I could grab my backpack and head out in. So now we're meandering that way.
Yeah, it was pretty similar. To go into film was straight up a prophetic word, which is a much longer story than the panel. Producing a number of independent films, it was a deep sense of injustice over and over again, and not just coming up against it and thinking that was rewarded, but also feeling it in myself, feeling the pull to that, and seeing that there is a profound sense of injustice that I could embrace for personal gain, and hoping that I could be a bulwark against that in my own life, and not to just kind of blanket be judgmental to the crazy Hollywood types. I see it infiltrating my own heart, and I see that as a threat. And so combining that with Bitcoin and trying to introduce justice and fairness and equity to the opportunity for filmmakers to progress themselves was pretty obvious by the time it came around. I had already been through that process a number of times, and when I saw the IndieHub demo, I said, that's what I've been looking for.
Okay, I'm last, but I'll keep it short because you guys are probably tired. I got into Bitcoin because it is a restoration of the logos to money. And I see that as an interesting problem because money infects everything we do, or it touches everything we do. So from a design perspective, it's like, if you can fix this thing that, or improve this thing that everyone is touching, their life UX like improves, right? So everything they touch improves just by this micro optimization, making the money better. It's not a micro, it's like pretty big improvement, obviously. But if you can improve that, the ROI on that small little change is like astronomical. So, that's why I'm like just pretty obsessed with improving the design of Bitcoin products and companies, because I think everyone knows, like, it's an area that's like lacking in general. It's like very hard to use, very confusing, typically not beautiful. It's like a polite way of saying it, but yeah. So like, how do we restore the logos to money, Bitcoin, and then how do we make Bitcoin proliferate? Better design. So that better design to me is like why I'm working on what I'm working on.
If I could add just one more thing, I named my project Coracle, and I didn't do this on purpose, but I later realized that it's the perfect name because a coracle is, it's a boat made out of reeds that are woven together, and they're circular, and they have no keel, so they're notoriously hard to steer. You're gonna dump over or, you know, have a hard time getting to where you go. But that's what Reep Achieve used to sail off into the east, you know, the Dawn Treader. And I wrote a blog post a while ago when I was trying to figure out what the next step was for my project. And I was just asking, like, where is my coracle going? I have no idea. I did not intend to be here on this stage. If you told me that was going to happen 2 years ago, I'd think you were crazy. God has opened a whole lot of doors, and all I had to do is step through them. And but I set the mission. I chose this mission, and then God blessed it. And it was an insanely unlikely thing that I chose to do. And, you know, just, I guess my point is talk to God, ask for his guidance and his blessing, and he'll give it to you. And if you need a change in direction, he'll give that to you too. God is sovereign, and he watches over us. So few parts of our lives are things that we have chosen for ourselves, and he is good.
I'd love to put, so we've been talking a little high-minded. I'd love to get a little bit more practical. And I think I remember very vividly when, you remember Arab Spring? And so this was an example of Twitter, this technology bringing freedom all over the world. How exciting. And it didn't actually end up working out that way. And that was kind of a bit of a false narrative. So I'd love if you guys have any examples or anecdotes of something that you've seen, like that is a good example of freedom tech. That is using technology really well for the glory of God to advance his kingdom, to bring freedom and the right sense to people. If you guys have like concrete examples of instances that you are seeing success in this world. You know, it's a little hard to I mean, I should have warned you about that.
I mean, I'm Bitcoin, right? I mean, that's the one to me. This is the most practical, impactful tool and technology that I've ever seen. And I think that it has the most outsized benefit by far. I think most of us in here would agree with that to some extent.
And what are the qualities, I guess, that how would you discern, like if you're new, you're walking in the door, it's like, oh, this Bitcoin thing, tell me more. And now you've heard qualities of it, like, ah, that's freedom tech.
That's a hard one. It's something that has to be experienced, right? When you, the final piece for me when it really clicked was when I connected my Sparrow wallet to my node. I knew that my node was direct with the network, and I was able to send that transaction without any permission from anybody. There's an experience to it that you have to kind of go through, but I think if I were to try to verbalize it, it would be... that it is, it's simple. Like it's in line with natural law, with physics. Like it's a simple rule set, but there's an infinite amount of combinations. That's the best I got.
I do totally know that vibe. I have I'm sorry to join the panel here, but as a developer writing code that moves Bitcoin and knowing that I could send a million applications to a million banks to ask me for an API to move money around. They'd never give it to me. But I could just sit there, hack it away, write some code, and that moved money. And that is a really liberating feeling.
Yeah, I think it's hard to answer that question without looking at a test that we've passed. You know, and the closest thing I can think of is the Canadian truckers protest. And Bitcoiners did like kind of a poor job. I'd still say it was a pass, but we got to do better. Looking at Nostr, like, well, it hasn't been tested, so we don't really know. When you're building technology, you have to build it before it can be tested. And so it relies on your vision. And so you put your vision out there, you instantiate it as best as you can, and then when it's tested, it either falls over or it succeeds. So, I mean, for Noster, we have to wait for the test. For Bitcoin, there's going to be lots more tests that are going to come. We'll see how we do.
Yeah, I got to meet someone who got out of Venezuela and was mining from 2011 and memorized the seed phrase, and it was the only way out, and kind of body searched, everything searched, and he had all of his value up in his head. I think that was the most kind of impactful one for me. I was like, that's, I can't even see that in the future. Whatever happens in America, I can't even imagine having to do that, but it worked.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much more to add other than the store of value use case for Bitcoin is just like very poignant to me as being like a Westerner, is like watching the monetary situation like degrade, is like knowing that myself and family can opt into this new money system that can survive a banking collapse, is, that is freedom tech, and anyone can do that. That's to me is like a really good example of freedom tech, even though it's not like, you know, the most like helping the poor type narrative, but it's like there are a lot of people that will suffer when banking becomes, or when banking gets ruined, fiat banking gets ruined. But we now have an option for people to preserve at least a portion of their freedom when that happens. So that's something I love about Bitcoin, is that anyone can access this. So that's great.
Do you guys have a theology of technology that you're working with? We had a really great few talks on the first day, like theology of government, and it's very helpful. And I know that there are a few people working on this theology of government, but I feel like it's a little scarce. Sometimes I think technology maybe is just kind of another form of power, and therefore you can kind of think of it like power or like money, like you can think of the rules. But like, yeah, what is God telling us about technology?
See my talk this morning.
I definitely missed your talk this morning.
Yeah, just to like summarize it, this is a question I've been trying to ask answer for myself for like a year or so. You know, and I summarize it as, what the heck is God doing with technology? Like, why did he give us technology that's so powerful that it can destroy us in all these different dimensions? Like, why? And the answer is, I think, just rejecting technological determinism. You know, we see the transhumanists and they're technological determinists, and they're like, technology, the material world, emergent complexity all result in the elevation of man to, you know, stardust or, you know, divine sparks or whatever you might call it, which is silly because, you know, the material can't transcend itself. And I think in a lot of ways we've internalized technological determinism, but we take it in a pessimistic direction. We're like, great, technology is God, and all it does is confer power recursively and exponentially, and we're screwed. But, you know, who is in charge? Who made it possible to make technology? Who created the world and laid everything out and governs it by his providence? God does. And so even though it looks like technology can blow up in all these different ways, God is sovereign, and he's actually the one in the driver's seat. And so when we interact with technology, we should do it in a faithful way and look at his plan, not technology's plan. Technology's plan is cancer. It's growth forever for its own sake, because that's the only next step that it can possibly do until all the matter in the universe is exhausted. God's plan actually has an endpoint, and its endpoint is love, relationship, and glory, ultimately, the creation of a new thing and the redemption of his people.
Yeah, I'd say from generation to generation, I look at tech in a similar way to philosophy or the development of theological thought in general. And the idea that, you know, Calvin wouldn't have been able to do a systematic theology as well as he did if Aquinas hadn't put so much work into his systematic theology hundreds and hundreds of years before. I wouldn't be able to understand God in the same way that I can, because I have access to both of those thinkers. And that happens, that sort of development happens every generation. And I have the tremendous benefit of thousands of years of intellectual thought and development of the human race. And I believe in the coming kingdom of God, and that it will be fleshed out in a way that we don't yet realize. And our generation will contribute something that's new and that hasn't been seen before. that is doesn't depart from the truths that were present in 34 AD, but are more fleshed out. And I think we understand God better because of the breadth and the depth of the world that we understand. And every scientific innovation we discover, we understand God a little bit better. And I think it's our responsibility to pass on to the next generation the best, most godly understanding of the revelation of the physical world that we have right now. It's one of the reasons I'm very passionate about storytelling. Storytelling, I think, develops in the same way. And we don't tell stories the same way that we did 100 years ago, but we tell stories in many ways in a more sophisticated way, and we understand God in a more complete way. And we have the treasure of knowing that, and I think we have the incredible opportunity to learn from younger generations about how they understand God and develop that thought in the world. So I see technology in the same way. It has tremendous power, and also has for good and evil. But rejecting it, pretending it's not there, isn't going to work. It's going to keep coming no matter what. And I believe the kingdom of God will do the same. And if we can live in that and pass that on in a more developed way, in a more fleshed out way, I think that's only good.
This kind of sparks a question in me. I'm curious what you guys think. Technology seems to come after the fall, right? So there is this like sort of, and then Cain, right? You talked about this earlier, like Cain, the line of Cain basically leads to all these like technological innovations. The thought that's interesting to me about that is like, when you look at technology, a lot of the most innovative people are actually criminals, because they're at the like fringes of society thinking about like weird solutions to like their problems, like, or like, how do I steal this car? You know, it's like, they're innovators too, but obviously they're doing it for the wrong reasons. But like, if you look back at the Genesis story, there's like obviously like criminality in the line of Cain, right? So I'm wondering if you guys see a connection between this, or if I'm like kind of like maybe being a Luddite.
I love this. It's a much longer conversation in my mind. I love this topic, but I love the idea that God set up an environment where human ingenuity for good and ill was going to progress things, right? And with Noah, right, you have the rainbow. He's not going to destroy it, so he has to make it work. And so you have redemption along with the fallen human nature in every generation moving forward. And I see a wonderful progress to that. And I also see an intensification of evil over time from that, and also an intensification and growth of good from the same growth and development.
Yeah, like what comes to mind here is that it's like, with great power comes great responsibility. It seems almost like more is being asked of us, and so it's going to require even greater discernment. Like, I had the thought over the last couple of years about AI. You know, the rules are still the same, right? Like, we have different tools and different technology, but the core themes are essentially the same. The game is the same, so to speak, for us. And so we're wielding technology that allows us to wield much more energy, much more efficiently, much more quickly, but it's going to require that much more of a strong orientation for good and in the right direction. And I think that something like AI has the potential to clear out a lot of the behavior that isn't oriented correctly, and the people that can use a technology or any technology like that in with the correct orientation and for the correct reasons, it really kind of separates the wheat from the chaff, you know? Like, so it just seems to me like it's the game is the same, the stakes are higher, and we have to continue to behave in a way that is, you know, appropriate and oriented correctly.
One of my favorite things about AI is they think they're making, like, a lot of these people think they're making their own God. And I get to watch them, and like, you're going to make an illustration for me about the finitude of humans' ability to create their own God. All right, so this is our last question, but I'm curious if you guys could help paint a future. It could be a good future or a bad future, but where you think things are going, and what is the result of having these tools in people's hands?
I think casting a vision for the future is really difficult, because we have to do it in terms of the past, and we, you know, there's lots to look at that we can restore. But what I've learned from, you know, the last year of inquiry into this stuff is that glory depends on the creation of something new, and the creation of something new is it's hard to anticipate. It comes when it's not expected. It even comes at the worst time when hope is lost. So casting a vision for the future is always going to be an incomplete thing and has to involve prayer. God has to be the one who reveals these things to us. There's something apocalyptic about looking at the future. You know, people always give these projections like, you know, well, AI has increased in intelligence so quickly and, you know, it's accelerating at this rate. And then you just project that into the future. And it's like, okay, well, in 4 years is the singularity and another like eight days after that, you know, we'll have colonized, you know, Alpha Centauri. It's like, that's just not how things work because of human action, but also because of divine providence. We live in a complex world that can't be just projected out into the future. People react to the way that things are. And that's great because that makes me way more optimistic for the future because whatever problems we might see or be projecting into the future, things are going to change tomorrow and they constantly do. And somehow we still just don't really like learn that lesson. We just keep projecting. One of my favorite verses is I want the knowledge of the Lord to fill the world so the waters cover the sea. And that means pushing the incarnation, the revelation of Jesus, the Holy Spirit, and his work in the church into every aspect of the world. And that doesn't mean slapping a cross sticker on everything or wearing a cross necklace or whatever. It's about understanding what God is up to, knowing him, and living your whole life in imitation of that in a really, really deep way. And that is just what I want to see happen, because when I see that happen in small places, it's always salutary, beautiful, and really productive and fruitful.
I'm hyper optimistic. I am very, very optimistic about the potential and humanity's potential. You know, it's always darkest right before dawn. And when things get tense and scary, I think that there is an equally positive reaction from a lot of people. I include myself in that. I was galvanized over the last couple of years. It was an opportunity to reassess what's important and what's right and how I'm oriented. And I think the move that's happening right now and some of the fear that's going on is really getting a lot of people oriented in the right direction or in a better direction. And so I think that, as human beings, we're kind of wired to worry about the worst case, but I think that the best case is unfathomably positive. I think it's huge.
I share that sentiment. Absolutely, incredibly optimistic. And I think one of the things that we're being shaken out of right now is that we outsource trust to institutions over many decades, and that's being checked. That reality check is happening right now. It feels good in the moment, but it's not entirely based on reality. And we are being shaken back to being based on reality. And in the film world, which is the world I know best, what that has meant is being very close to the money printer, an enormous amount of debt, an enormous amount of cornering the market, and a risk off mentality has led away from storytelling in a way that's culturally resonant, which takes a tremendous amount of risk on the part of the artist and on the part of the money. And that risk is being reduced right now. As that gets shaken out, it's very painful. A lot of the movies that come out are not culturally resonant at all. A lot of money is lost. A lot of layoffs are happening right now. And that's all very real, and that's all very real pain. But I look at it in terms of if we're resetting around actual reality, what it was intended to do in the world, which I don't believe is going anywhere at all. I think storytelling is as inelastic a demand as insulin. The next generation will then have a more reality-based culture of storytelling. And I see that happening all over the place right now. It's very painful in the moment, and I think it will lead to much, much better exponential outcomes in the future.
Things are going to get much, much better. No doomers up here. No black pillars up here. White pills only. Things are going to get better. God wins in the end. That's my prediction for the future.
Amen.
Yeah.
Well, thank you everybody for your work. Thank you God for winning all the time, and thank you for joining us.
And thank you Jordan for putting this on. This really is like the best event by far. So if you see Jordan, give him a big thank you.